Yeah, some of the, you told me about the traditional crops. Okay, so coming into the more modern, I don't know if you call it the more modern era, mm-hmm. but maybe what was the progression from this subsistence to not where we are now, but, you know, coming forward, mm-hmm. what was that progression, I guess?
Mm-hmm. Probably one of the key events was the arrival of the railroad in 1881. And before that, it took months to get here from Mexico, months to get here from Kansas City. It took a long time. So once the railroad came and compressed that amount of time that people could come here and also that goods could go to market someplace else, that transformed the way that people lived around here, transformed the building materials that they used to build their houses, transformed what they grew, transformed where they could send their crops to. So instead of putting a barrel of wheat on a wagon and, you know, having it arrive in Kansas City 90 days later, now they could put a barrel of wheat on a railroad and it would arrive in Kansas City 2 or 3 days later. So that transformed the way that farmers then started thinking of how to market their goods. And so it changed from a subsistence agricultural economy to a more market-driven economy of being able to send stuff away. Oh, one other thing I forgot to mention about what was grown here. Even before the railroad came through, grapes were a staple of the area. Mm. And, there was a lot of grapes here, a lot of grapes down in El Paso. Some of the brandy that was made in El Paso was prized around the region. Up until the 1940s, the symbol for the city of Las Cruces were grapes, were a bunch of grapes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and that came from Mexico?
Whether it came from the priest who brought up grapes for their sacramental wine, or I'm not sure exactly how it came here, but I have always heard that wine from New Mexico was highly prized in the courts of Spain. Now, there weren't anybody during the Spanish colonial times. There were no settlers down here, mm-hmm. but still up north, there were grapes that were making wines that were sent all the way back to Spain.
Okay, I had never made that connection, but that makes complete sense.
Whether it was good wine or just exotic wine, I don't know. I haven't tasted that wine from then, but
okay. the railroad was one of the things that really affected
mm-hmm.
the wars. Did that also kind of change the way that New Mexico? I mean, maybe I'm jumping ahead historically, but
mm-hmm. And which wars are you talking about?
Like the World Wars, World War
One. Yeah, that is a jump ahead. Let's I guess for agriculture here in southern New Mexico, before the World Wars, a key event happened, which was the creation of Elephant Butte Dam. And this is also a bit different than northern New Mexico. The Newlands Act of 1902 created a federal agency to create water management systems throughout the West. And the Newlands Act then put the muscle and the economic might of the federal government to start damming the rivers of the West. And so a lot of rivers were dammed. And one of the early ones was the Rio Grande, just around Truth or Consequences, back then known as Hot Springs. So Elephant Butte Dam was built around 1915, 1916. And even before that, down here in the Mesilla Valley, irrigation systems were built in anticipation of the water that would be released from the Elephant Butte Dam through the growing season. Elephant Butte Dam started releasing water in the late 19-teens, and that transformed agriculture here because then farmers had a steady supply of water
okay.
all summer long.
And you said that came from the stream?
It came from the Rio Grande.
The Rio Grande. Okay. And did... Okay. And how much... Do you know how much water is... ever is moved?
Yeah.
This year? Now?
Yeah. It's been disrupted because of the drought the last 5 or 10 years. Annually, the Elephant Butte Dam is supposed to release about 1 million acre feet of water. And 1 acre foot of water is a little over 300,000 gallons of water. So it's supposed to release 1 million acre feet of water. And that's obligated to be split up three ways. First, about a third of it is supposed to go to... No, excuse me. Let me think. A million. Okay, I think... I know you're going to edit this, so let me think how I'm going to say it. The Elephant Butte Dam is obligated to release 1 million, on good years of water, 1 million acre feet of water a year, and 1 acre feet is a little over 300 million gallons of water. So it's distributed about 40% to the farmers in New Mexico, in the Hatch area and in the Mesilla Valley, about 40% to the city of El Paso, and El Paso converts that for municipal water use. And then about 20% goes to Juarez. So that's an international treaty that has established that. Then to distribute water throughout the valley, the Mesilla Valley here, there are laterals that just are like a spider web throughout the valley. And some people continue, a lot of farmers continue to have water rights from EBID, Elephant Butte Irrigation District, and they get water for their pecan fields, for their lettuce or cotton. And you notice these are crops that weren't crops that were around before Elephant Butte compounded the water or impounded the water.
So because of Elephant Butte, that's what really pushed the agriculture ahead here?
It transformed the crops that were grown. There were a lot of crops that were grown here. Farmers, you know, had a, except for years of drought, had a pretty good growing season here. But Elephant Butte permitted water to be released through the growing season and also permitted thirsty crops like cotton, like pecan trees, to thrive here.
Okay.
So that it changed what was grown here. And this is, of course, for market. We ship pecans throughout the world. We ship cotton throughout the world. So that there's a lot of crops that weren't allowed or weren't able to before. Now, also, EBID releases water to residences as well. So about every 3 weeks, those houses that have EBID water rights are able to flood their lawns and their fields with water for about 2 days. So you just flood them, turn it on, flood it, and then turn it off. So that helps to make this part of the state an oasis as well.
Okay.
Now, the Newlands Act is like plumbing the rivers of the West. It's like at Elephant Butte Dam, just think of it as a big bathtub. And then they release it, and the water goes down the Rio Grande and goes in, and then they close that up, and it starts filling up again. And the water season, again, depending on the spring runoff and the water that's impounded at Elephant Butte, runs from about mid-April to mid-October.
Okay. And then it's turned off.
And then it's turned off from, say, October to April. Although sometimes in good water years, they might open up the floodgates as early as March or even late February.
Depending on how much snow and how much runoff.
Yeah.
Okay. But it seems like a lot. I mean, just as far as going to cities, and if a third is coming to the farmers in the valley, mm-hmm. and then where does Las Cruces get their water? Does it also come from?
We get our drinking water from the Mesilla Basin, which is underneath the Mesilla Valley, and it goes all the way down to Juarez.
Okay.
So there's this big aquifer that's underneath here, And that's where we get our water. El Paso gets some water there. Even Juarez gets some water from that aquifer, which is a concern because it'll dry up sooner or later.
Right, and that's, I guess I will be asking about that just because development seems to be going full force in the state.
Also, farmers tap that aquifer. So there's some, you can just ride around the valley and you can see the fields that have muddy water in it, mm-hmm. and that's from EBID. You can see the fields that have clear water, and that's the well water that they're pumping, or the water from the aquifers.
Okay.